options activity has altered the investment landscape. Get an edge on this massive flow of funds with Tier 1 Alpha's Market Situation Report, brought to you by HedgEye, a daily newsletter of the latest moves in the options market and a weekly webcast featuring myself, Mike Green of Simplify Asset Management, and Tier 1 Alpha's Craig Peterson and David Pegler. Go to HedgEye.com/research for more information.
Hi, I'm HedgEye's founder, Keith McCullough. If you like what you hear, you will love our investing research. We bring transparency, accountability, and actionable investing ideas to investors big and small. I'll put our investing process and team up against anyone in the world. Please visit HedgEye.com to subscribe and learn a better way to invest.
Hi, I'm Keith McCullough, and welcome back. So, second one today. We have one more after this, but like I said, today is my moving day or my education day, where I get to learn a lot from domain experts. We just had Mackenzie Davis. We go from Mackenzie Davis, obviously, to Nancy Davis from Quadratic, one of my favorite people in the business. If you're going to get very specific on yield curves, we have to talk to you, right? So, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, me too.
And I know you want me to start to think this through, this whole, okay, how, let's just go there, right? How would and why would the yield curve finally start to steepen?
Well, we came into 2024 with a huge expectation for cuts, right? So
yep.
We came in with 6, now we're under 2. So I feel like that has really moved the forward market. If you look at the 1 year at the end of 24, the forward has fallen 50 basis points this year. So the entries, you know, could it go down more? Yes, possible. But it's been pretty hammered.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing thing. I mean, it really did track, actually, it tracked the global industrial manufacturing cycle, the yield curve did. It didn't track AI, rainbows and puppy dogs. It just like, because, you know, like I just reviewed with Mackenzie or anybody who's looked back, it's an empirical fact, right? I mean, you had everything, including the Chinese recession, German recession, pretty much bottomed in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So if you're to get a reacceleration in that part of economic growth and you just look back in history, I mean, the yield curve would have to steepen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess now we got the Fed in the way, potentially.
Well, I feel like commodities, you know, you've had a great, you know, the Quad 2 theme and the inflation when kind of old Wall Street's not really calling for that. You're screaming from the rooftops, but the commodity markets have moved. Yep. I think the rates and the inflation markets are just things that people don't necessarily look at for inflation because they didn't exist in the 70s and 80s, right? The rate derivative market started really in the 2000s. You know, there's swap data back to, you know, kind of the 90s, if you pull way back, but there was no vol market, there was no derivatives market, even the inflation-protected bond market. The U.S. Treasury only first started issuing TIPS in 1997.
Yeah, after Dalio told them they should.
Right.
It's like, look, I got these things here. I write this letter, I got these things, and yeah. Why don't you, Larry, I think it was Summers, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you just... it's crazy to me, like that's brilliant. Right? You create a plug so that when duration's not working, your bond portfolio does better than the ones that are going straight down.
Yeah.
One of the most brilliant, you become a billionaire if you do that, right? If you have access to the government and you do that. But more to your point, like, it's kind of nutty that TIPS have only been around since the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think a lot of the markets are pricing in higher inflation, greater inflation expectations, except the obvious things, which are the inflation and the rates markets. They really haven't moved. So they haven't bought into the story. Like a lot of the Wall Street sell side analysts, the old Wall Street, as you call it, they're still calling for, you know, easing inflation. Inflation expectations haven't increased. Real yields are super attractive. They're so high, meaning, you know, inflation's really for sale and cheap.
Yeah. Well, can you go through that, like the because you deal in relative space a lot. You need to. And what I just said about Dalio is an absolute relative bet. You got a 60-40 portfolio. On the 40, I'm going to outperform when your duration goes down. Voila. Right?
Yeah.
TIPS, like the relative trade, relative value maybe. Would you describe it that way in TIPS relative to something else?
Well, I think TIPS are tricky because I think, you know, I started my career right when the TIPS market started in the late 90s at Goldman. And I always, you know, as a young trader, I was like, these don't make any sense because they're they're still long duration, right? Mm-hmm. So they all lose money based on when duration moves higher. And yep. that's why we created Eyeball, right? To solve the duration problem with tips alone. And then also the consumer price index, right? Like, come on.
You know? It's like a joke.
Joke.
Yeah.
Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Fed doesn't even use it. A third of it's rent, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a bet right now about whether, you know, the housing crisis, the housing shortage. And so I think we access, using the rates market, using the yield curve, another way to access inflation expectations in the future outside of just the CPI.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, I don't know if everybody's familiar with like five-year forwards or two-year, whatever your duration is. Why wouldn't, like, oil goes up, it's going to be up, if I'm right, at the top end of the range, about 30% in 3 months.
Yeah.
CRB broad index, 15%. Oil's the juice. We're seeing just rip-roaring breakouts in inflation and things that never really deflated, like housing prices, back to your point on why the CPI is a joke.
Or, yeah.
I mean, go try to buy a house. And like, you tell me if there was any aggregate inflation that's occurred in the last 3 years,
yeah.
People would, like, tell you to go fly a kite. I mean, so, like, when you, like, why wouldn't those, I don't trade those, by the way. And I agree, tips to me has never, like, actually from a common sense perspective made any sense, so I don't trade tips. But when am I going to wake up to five-year fours or inflation expectations on whatever duration you wanted? Like, does it just take off, like, those things? Or is it some old wall guy at Goldman's like, well, maybe we're going to market that up there today? I mean, seriously, I wonder sometimes.
It's cheap. I mean, you look at the rates market, you look at the inflation markets, especially relative to whether it's commodity equities or the commodity markets in general, kind of everything is moving to higher inflation expectations, which is what your process has been calling for. But the inflation, the rates markets, Eyeball, they look cheap.
Very cheap. Well, I mean, Eyeball's going to make a generational low.
Oh,
I mean,
it hit an all-time low yesterday.
Yesterday. Right before you came in here?
Yeah. Well, it's up today a little bit. But yesterday was awful.
Well, because yesterday you had a huge
flattening.
Yeah. The tens twos went to minus 42 from minus 35 or something.
Well, what we own the SOFR swaps curve, the OTC market.
And oh, everybody knows what that is.
So it's cheaper than the Treasury market.
Can you explain what that is, the SOFR?
Yeah, so it's the swaps market is really the unfunded market, right? Because to buy Treasuries, you need to put up cash and pay for it. So the swaps curve is actually lower than the Treasury curve. So the swaps curve is about negative 70 right now, looking at the twos, tens.
Really? Why would that be minus 70 instead of, why the difference? Minus 42 versus minus 70 is a big delta.
Yeah, so it's a lot cheaper.
Yep. And that's where you've been buying.
That's what we own.
Oh, so you've been like going into the bottom of the dumpster and saying.
I don't know if it's a dumpster.
I should say.
Dumpster is not the right word.
The bottom of the cycle. Okay, the bottom of the sine curve. Guys, can you show our sine curve chart with the animals on it? I mean, that's what I meant. I mean, not like dumpster. Apologies. Very bad. That was the wrong word. But right into the bottom. Like, you're like, if I think that things, there it is. See that sine curve? We are here. Yeah. That's what I meant.
Okay.
Like, you're right. Like, you can like, literally, like, pick up dimes down there. So so correct me if I'm wrong. If you think that this thing's going to finally start to steepen, that's, you're going to go low.
Yeah.
As low as you can go.
Yeah, no, it's really, really cheap right now. And we've had terrible performance this year because the curve has inverted so much this year because of all the expectations changing on the cuts. And nobody really pricing in inflation to stick around in the rates or inflation markets. So I think it's it's hard to know. You know, you can't promise performance, obviously, but I think it's, you know, it hit a 52-week low yesterday. It's definitely had terrible performance this quarter. Mm-hmm. And inflation expectations are really contained.
Right. But they won't be. I mean, this is like rates and high yield yesterday trade this way. It doesn't trade like a glacial, nice little smooth stock. I mean, it trades like a heart attack. I mean, it's like, so, guys, if you show the monthly quads, can you show that? I think it's on slide 20. Our nowcast would say it's not going to be very clear, but let's just say by the time the Federal Reserve figures it out, like fully, and actually starts their press conference with inflation has reaccelerated, then everybody's going to know.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't actually have that on a monthly quad basis until you get out, well, really in 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just going to go quad three, quad two, quad three, quad two. Quad three and quad two just means inflation still go up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why I asked the question, like, is some old wall guy who, like, literally, like, when I learned how fixed income traded at Carlyle, I was like, really? Because nobody would take their marks.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Lehman guy calls, or buy sides, he's, Lehman guy calls, Goldman guy's, well, they know that price now. Like, this is definitely not a market that I know well in terms of how the trades. I mean, is that how five years or that kind of like that price changes?
Well, I think, you know, there's no, because everybody in the U.S., all the institutions are benchmarked to the ag, right? They all have, it used to be the Lehman ag, it was then the Bloomberg ag, now it's the Bloomberg ag before. And
ag, that's got like mortgages and stuff in it, right?
Yeah, it has no inflation protection. So I think adding inflation adds a lot of tracking risks for a lot of the institutional investors. So some markets like the UK, they have a mandate for the pension systems to buy linkers. But in the US, it actually creates tracking risk. So I think
really?
Just, yeah.
That's odd.
Yeah, it's really weird, right? You would think that they would want that.
A linker, like linked to inflation.
Yeah, inflation protected bonds, anything with inflation. So it's not, there's no tips in the ag. And the ag, to your point, has about 25% is mortgages, which are a short vol. So, you know, it seems like a great time to be buying rate volatility instead of just being short vol in your bond portfolio, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, look, if you're like me, short TLT, for example, it's like this thing goes down, straight down, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're an allocator, an endowment, like there are a lot of issues out there. And I sincerely hope that some endowments are watching this and pension funds, asset allocators, because if they don't figure this out soon, mm-hmm. that inflation's real, they are going to get, like, these retirees are going to get killed.
Yeah.
Absolutely killed. So they should just take their money and put it in iVol to start, right? Yeah. By the way, I'm getting very close. I've been, the way that I'm, my process, you've heard this enough times, but it just needs to start making higher lows. Mm-hmm. Right. And by definition, if it hit a new low yesterday, that could be today. All it needs is an up day, and then it needs two out of three up days. And then all of a sudden, in 3 weeks or less, my trade signal would go bullish. Yeah. And that's when you'd see us add it to our asset allocation model. If I was more of a value type, like an asset allocator, like a longer term pension fund, I'd have to start buying it now. Mm-hmm. I can't like get cued like that. So do you have those kinds of discussions or?
Well, we do have a lot of institutional investors who use our fund. A lot of endowments, a lot of insurance companies. You know, it's been hard with the wealth management. Like, I think we do have some RIAs that use the ETF, but a lot of the wealth management platforms don't have iVol approved.
Really?
Yeah.
Still?
Yeah.
Well, after all that outperformance, I remember that run. It had that run in, we were long at it, was 2000. And what was the big run? You had the big 18% melt up.
So from 2020... we made money every single month in 2020, including
yes.
March when TIPS lost money. And then if you look at the first quarter of 21, when TIPS lost on their duration, iVol was up 18%,
yeah, 18.
During that period.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is you look at the forward space, because we have our options don't expire today. They expire in the future. The forward is significantly lower. It's about 55 basis points lower now than it was in the start of 2020. So it's, you know, everything's mean reverting, right? And
right.
An inverted yield curve is not going to be a forever thing. It's mm-hmm. just a, you know, it's never been this inverted for this long ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm eager to see when it starts performing again.
Well, if you were to make a bet, this is where you start to make the bet. I mean, unless you're completely macro unaware, which is like 80% of people, maybe more. Yeah. But there's also like huge tax advantages to it.
Yeah.
Can you go through that? I mean, I can't wait to be long again because I remember I get my monthly distribution and I get my tax advantages, right? So can you explain why you structured it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent about 10 years at Goldman on the risk arbitrage desk. And so I think coming, not stocks at all, just risk arb and on the prop side. And I think in fixed income in particular, you need every basis point counts and real return should be the focus. So there are lots of tax strategies on the equity side now, like direct indexing, and even in the options market with 1256 contracts. But part of the reason that we use that OTC, you know, SOFR curve instead mm-hmm. of the Treasury curve is because we get this really unique tax treatment.
Hmm.
So So our options get taxed as ordinary assets, which is amazing because there's no cap on, just naturally when you have a long options portfolio, not all of them are going to make it into expiration. In fact, we have a June option, which is basically marked at zero right now, which should shelter and generate negative income. It's either, going to make money, but most likely it'll probably expire, and that will generate negative ordinary income in 24. And so last year in 23, that 30 basis points every month, 100% of it was taxed as return of capital. So no income taxes, no capital gains tax. And that's because the options generated negative ordinary income. And, with a long option, you can't lose more than you pay. And with the option marked at, basically zero, a lot of potential tax benefits or upsides.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. I think you call it tax alpha.
Tax alpha. Yeah.
Nobody's ever called it tax alpha.
It's a made up word.
You made it up? I make stuff up all the time. But that's got to be, from a family office perspective or an RIA, they get that math.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks especially are using munis these days. And
really?
Yeah. Well, it's the only thing else besides eyeball that I think is good on the fixed income side for taxes. But to be able to generate, basically we have 80% in treasuries and then a small piece in options. And the options can shelter that interest income from the treasuries, potentially.
Yeah, that's what you meant. You mean like tax-free munis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't trade those.
I don't love the credit risk for many states.
But. Yeah, it's just like, it's crazy. But once you look into, I think there's a lot of actually not tax alpha, but just alpha to be had, just cracking open these ETFs, looking at what's inside. Like to your point, you look at ag, how many people own ag? David Salem, first thing he had me do, David, he's long-term asset allocation, pension funds, endowments, et cetera. And he's like, I need your signals on ag, AGG. I'm like, I'm never going to own that. And he's, but it's because that's what the institutional community wants to know.
Yeah, so they're
BND,
all
BND, AGG. But back to the point, and you've made this point. This is your point. I'm going to just ask you about it. But ag is 25% mortgages. Mm-hmm. And now the Fed has made a different statement on mortgages.
Yes.
Okay, so what do we do with that?
I think it's just time that people are aware that mortgages are short ball. Homeowners can prepay whenever they want. And if you own the mortgage, you're short options to homeowners. And whenever you're short options, you're short ball. So I think a lot of the institutions will use eyeball as a way to reduce that embedded short volatility in the bond portfolio and then add inflation expectations and inflation expectations outside of CPI to help, because the whole point of the ag is core fixed income, but it's not really core if you have no inflation, especially given what squad we're in right now.
And you have what the Fed's not buying anymore.
Yeah. And the Fed's kind of said we're not going to own mortgages long term. And the balance sheet's still $7
trillion. Wow.
Do you think that that's going to bleed out? Like the MBS, all that stuff?
I think they're probably going to ease the balance sheet roll off kind of in the short term. I don't think they should. I think it's more inflationary in the long term. But they did more QE in that 8 weeks after the start of the COVID pandemic than they did for a decade before. So it's just
that didn't have any impact on inflation.
Nothing. Yeah.
Structural inflation. I thought it was just a supply chain bottlenecks.
Right.
Like, are you kidding me? It's so bad. I don't know if you heard Vivek, the conversation or the excerpt of it, but I've never actually heard a politician other than maybe Ron Paul rip the Fed I would take it down. He didn't say you'd abolish the Fed, and neither would I. It's like a reno. My dad and I, used to help my dad build houses, and you do a reno. You knock down the old shit, and you redo it right. Mm. Nice kitchen, all this stuff. My version of a nice kitchen on the Fed would take out all the one or two of the 785 economists, replace them with a group of people like you, right? Mm. And you guys probably do it for free. Here we got to pay for 23,000 yo-yos running around with their hair on fire telling you that inflation's bumpy and not breaking out. So, it is interesting that you do have some high-profile political, presidential candidate in this case, just saying, that's just dumb.
Yeah.
In our career, we haven't had that. What would you do? if I knew that that he was going to be made vice president, like, let's just say, I'm sure you're really excited about this. Let's say that Trump wins, Vivek's in, or at least he has some influence, and you know that the Federal Reserve, something like that's going to happen. Like, would that change what you do?
Well, so we're a 1940 Act fund as the ETF, so we have a prospectus. So it's not like going to change it, but we have been buying more longer dated options because vol has gotten cheaper. Like, if you look at where we were for Silicon Valley Bank, like, literally nothing has changed, right? All the same problems that existed in March 23 still exist now. You know, there's still no mark to market. There's still if anything, the Treasury has to refinance more debt. Interest rates are so much higher now. But vol is, I think, a good thing for people to own in their bond portfolio, especially just because of the mortgage exposure with that natural short vol exposure.
Yep.
So, you know, but it wouldn't change necessarily our investment because we have a prospectus. We follow the prospectus. So nothing would change. But I do think there could be so many reasons for the curve to normalize, whether it's long-dated rates moving higher or short-dated rates falling. And I think that's what I like so much about the strategy is it's not – most times you buy a fixed income fund, whatever it is, you're really betting one thing,
yeah.
Right? You want yields lower and you want credit spreads tighter. Right now, credit spreads are so tight,
yeah.
Right? And everybody's worried about interest rates right now, so everybody's sitting in short duration. It's just a tricky time.
Yep. So you would say that any structural change and or leadership change embedded therein at the Federal Reserve would be a vol event. I think that that's a brilliant answer.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know which way rates are going to go or the market, but I think owning vol, especially because everybody's short vol already on their bond portfolio, is just like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as you let us in, like this morning I was like, on the call, I said, if I could reincarnate myself, I'd come back as like a Viking, you know, against the old wall, right? You come in there and they got the sitting there fat and happy with their crowns on, eating a lamb chop. And you just, you're like, okay, let's do this differently here at the Fed. And I think, I mean, first of all, the bond market just did that to the Fed.
Yeah.
The bond market went total skull Viking on Jay Powell, mm-hmm. right? So all you that love him, great, nice guy. Seems very pleasant. Sat beside me at a restaurant one day. He didn't know who I was, thank God. but he seems like a nice man, mm-hmm. nice, very rich man. But if for the next stage of our career, instead of the game being rigged by the state and for the elites and all that, and on what rates are should do or force to do, this calendar guidance on rates, that is Volmageddon.
Volmageddon.
Because you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Right? If the whole game for our career, obviously disagree if you want, as you always will. The whole game in the game has been around trying to up our certainty on what the Fed is going to do next.
Robert McGrory here, Director of Subscriber Development at HedgeEye. Hope you're enjoying our podcast. Start generating alpha with our suite of Sector Pro investing research products. Dive deep into retail, industrials, technology, and everything in between with exclusive access to the sharpest analysts and actionable ideas on Wall Street. Go to hedgeye.com/research to subscribe. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
Yeah, and the Fed's only been focused on hiking rates, not really reducing the balance sheet. Because the swap lines that were put into place with Silicon Valley Bank, the BTSP, it just expired, right? Just in the middle of March did it end. So that was sort of like backdoor QE in a way, because all of that liquidity was being provided out there. So I do think now vol is really a coiled spring, especially in the fixed income side where, you know, there's so many reasons for it to normalize the yield curve, to normalize for vol to move higher. There's just so many catalysts out there. And I'm not sure when it's going to happen because it's definitely been frustrating.
But it starts with, something like this. We're talking big picture stuff I'll stop asking about this. But I mean, it starts with a move in what I call vol of vol.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, so we measure and map every security, price, volume, volatility, and the volatility of the volatility, because then that gets you to make the turns up and down. And some people, when they hear you say vol or bond market vol, they'll just think the move index. I mean, it had a huge move yesterday. Actually, the move did.
It went
to 110. So when you try to teach people, like what you mean by vol, what they should look at so they can see the vol that you're talking about and how suppressed it is, particularly on longer term stuff. Yeah, how do you explain that to people?
So iVol accesses the OTC markets. That's part of the reason we had that really unique ordinary treatment from a tax perspective, but it's really hard to see.
Yeah.
That's kind of the challenge. So we're giving access to those markets, but without really a Bloomberg terminal, there is no index for it. Because in the rates market, there's, you know, Treasury Vol, which is options on Treasury futures. There's obviously OTC Swaption Vol. There's what we own is Curve Vol. So
Curve
it's just
Vol.
Something different. It's a different type of volatility. It's actually sold by a lot of the structured products markets. So mm-hmm. out of Asia and Europe. So this Vol is cheaper and very depressed because it has a correlation component in it as well. So our Vol is kind of, it's not the move index. I know it's frustrating because a lot of people look at the move and try to compare it to iVol's performance.
Mm.
iVol has other things in there too, you know, the delta obviously from the yield curve, but it is long this type of Vol, and it's just to me a cheaper way to access the Vol markets because it's priced lower than regular Swaption Vol or Treasury Vol.
Cooked Curve Vol.
Curve Vol.
She's talking Curve Vol.
Curve Vol. Okay.
Yeah, good. The but really what somebody who doesn't do what you do or even try to understand what you do, like I'm trying to understand what you're doing, is understand like how suppressed. I mean, Bernanke's written about this extensively. The goal is to suppress equity vol,
mm-hmm.
right? The goal is to suppress vol across all things vol, because we cannot, as American people or patriots or capitalists anymore, handle any vol.
Right.
Right? So if you're of the view that interest rates only go to zero, then you wouldn't buy long-term vol. Like, you know, and if there are a lot of dynamics to this where we talk about a lot through the lens of Tier 1 Alpha, more so in the equity market. But the hedge fund community has been all but neutered on making a bet 3 months out on protection.
Yeah.
Never mind, like, what you're buying. So can you talk about that? Because what I love about you is you do not veer from your process.
Yes. No, we're very rigid with what we're doing and the access that we're giving. But, you know, I know you love made up words. So I've made up a new word because our vol is really unique. Because when the curve starts to normalize, meaning it goes less inverted.
You mean realized vol?
Realized vol, implied vol.
Yep.
The implied volatility tends to go up when the curve steepens.
Yep.
So right now it's massively inverted. The spot curve is, you know, about negative 70 and the 2 is 10 SOFR. As the curve moves less inverted or goes positive, the vol tends to go up.
Yep.
And I made up a word for it. This is not a real term, but I call it volvexity.
Ooh.
Yeah, you like that one, right?
Volvexity.
Volvexity.
That is going to find its way into an early look. The volvexity. I'm not going to talk about what we almost started this conversation with. That word.
That's secret.
Yeah, that is a secret. Nancy Davis and I have secrets, all right? You know, so, volvexity. That's good.
So the vol tends to, and that's what you saw in that great period when you first bought iVol and added it to your performance, your portfolio, when the curve started to go up and it's lower now than it was then, the vol tends to go up as well. And that's the reason for that. It you can explain why, because so many of the dealers have structured products. And so these structured notes are sold mostly out of Europe and Asia. And when they start to lose money, the people, the end investors, whether it's Taiwanese insurance companies or retail, they lose principal. Mm-hmm. And so the dealers sell Vega, they sell Vol to hedge that exposure. And as the curve normalizes and goes less inverted, then they take off their hedges.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually buy back the Vol that they sold, which makes the Vol go up. That's the Vol backside.
I love it. I like it. So rewind that, listen to her again. But like, unless you're making a permanent bet that we're just talking about the curve to invert less.
Yes.
Right? There is no history to suggest that the yield curve is going to go to dead flat and then steepen through to, it could be at 200 plus 260 basis points on 10s, 2s.
Yeah, totally.
Right? I mean, it's so, I think you should all understand that like there's a huge, if you're just a value guy, which I'm not, thank God, because that's where I've screwed up the most things.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm super smart. You know, I had the lowest SAT score at Yale, but I'm really smart. And I'm going to buy because I know what the valuation is. Nobody else knows when to buy this. So of all my screw ups, that's number one. So that's why I'm not a value guy. But I'm a cycle guy. So if you were ever to, so if you're, even if you, there are a lot of value people, and I'm not trying to poo-poo them, I'm just saying that I suck at it. If you're a value guy, if you're a big mean reversion gal, like the number one bet you would bet in all of macro is on the curve because everything else has moved.
Yeah. Well, all the inflation markets, commodities, commodity equities, they're all moving to, you know, your quad.
Yes.
They're all moving that way, but the rates and inflation market haven't moved yet. So
right.
I think it's a good opportunity.
Well, it's like Mackenzie Davis and I.
He's my brother. No, I'm just kidding. It's a joke. It's a joke.
Hey, that would be like if you want to clone like a family gene, like if you like, you know, whatever the thing is.
No, I think everybody who stepped off the boat and they couldn't pronounce a name became Davis.
All right.
Pretty common.
Oh, there you go. I learned something. You know, I learned a lot in this conversation. But it like the kind of the bottom feeder thing to do in commodities right now, I'm like, should I buy nickel? Because you look at everything that's busted a move and the train's left the building, right? I mean,
yeah.
But I'm looking at the stuff that hasn't broken out. Nickel started to break out. So he, and then he explained to me how screwed up the dynamics, supply demand dynamics, Indonesia, pollution, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, I'll just stay with copper, right? But it's never happened actually. You've never seen a quad two breakout and everything else and keep the yield curve down there.
Yeah.
So you have to believe that I love blaming the Fed. Blame the Fed because they totally screwed up everyone's inflation view again.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have had yesterday's move, you know, in terms of the curve. So, you know, if you had a free market and you neutered the Fed and you just put you and I on a board to observe what the two people we had running a couple models would do, that'd be better.
Yeah.
Because the curve would already be steepening.
Yeah, I don't understand why it's not steeper. Like, I'm sort of like, every day I'm like, oh my gosh, why are more people not, you know, looking at...
It's the flow of consensus positioning.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so if everyone's positioned this way and the Fed, like the Fed's way, up until yesterday, you know, because you're like a hawk on this stuff. But everyone was kind of like trying to, you know, they're trying to buy housing stocks, some REITs, you know, curve was starting to steepen a bit. They're sitting there like, Fed's going to reiterate 3 cuts instead of 2, and the street's now at 2.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's like none. That's a total screw-up in terms of communication, right?
Yeah.
The communication reflects the incompetence of the analysis because they didn't know that inflation is accelerating, or now they do. So I can't explain it any other way than the flow had to move, get back on side. The loser in that trade was the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's like the point. Maybe that's why at least my God put you in the seat today to explain this to me.
You understand this.
Yeah.
I don't need to explain.
No, but timing matters.
Well, you bought Eyeball when the fund was like really small and really new. Like you,
yep.
And we had never talked before. I remember it was during the pandemic. I think I was actually in North Carolina doing the first video and you got it immediately. You totally did. So I'm eager to see when your process buys Eyeball again.
It might be. I don't know. You have to see. I mean, it could. It should be. That's why I kind of go through my faults as a value investor. If it's too early, it will be surprising, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's inconsistent with all of market history, like when you're going into quad two.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's definitely weird because you have commodities here and the rates and inflation market here. It's like, you know, total disconnect right now. Mm-hmm.
Which is why, like, part of my, you know, like, it's not a conspiracy theory. I mean, a lot of conspiracies are true. I mean, it's not like there are the flows of the machine, but then there's the man, you know, the people that are plugged into, you know, manipulating the flows. And you cannot sustain, like, if you had a back-to-back day in the bond market like you did yesterday, today, maybe it's happening again. I mean, forget Volvexity. I mean, we're going to go...
Like, you like that word,
yeah,
right?
The super sexy Volvexity. That thing would be going. They just couldn't. They need to have time to reposition.
Yeah.
You can't lose that kind of money that fast.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't. Maybe there are many other reasons. There's always many more reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it was the eclipse.
Or the earthquake.
Was it the earthquake?
or the lightning striking the Statue of Liberty. A lot of weird things going on.
Were you working when the quake hit?
Yeah, I was in our Greenwich office with my colleague, and we were like, is that a truck? Or, you know, and then my other colleague called, and he's like, did you feel the earthquake? I was like, yes, I did. I was actually talking to one of our institutional clients and responding to a question. I was like, oh my gosh, did you just feel that earthquake? Was that what that was?
Yeah.
That's like it when you're wild.
It was, we were sitting, those guys across from me, because you'd see my, excuse me, my screens are high.
Yeah.
So they started shaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like,
it was pretty wild.
How can you just, if you don't mind, like just talk a little bit more about that? How does an institutional client conversation go with Nancy Davis? Like, is there a typical conversation?
You know, a lot of our institutional investors kind of get it. They're like, the CPI is not the only way to measure inflation. They like the exposure, especially because there's so many institutions who've gone into private credit,
yeah.
Right? That's been like the magic unicorn, and they're looking for high returns, right? At the end of the day, you know, eyeball is probably a pretty decent hedge potential because the curve tends to steepen when credit spreads widen, when equities sell off. So it's probably a pretty decent hedge, but none of the institutions want hedges, right? For the most part, they just want to make money. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of them are looking at the upside potential, given that we have that asymmetric payoff with the long options. Mm-hmm. You know, the most that we can lose is a premium that we pay with the options. So there's, you know, defined downside with the options positions. And then the asymmetry is so great that they look at the upside potential for just a normalization. Like, we're not talking the curve normalizing and being like, even Japan has a positively sloped yield curve. Mm-hmm. It's like 180 degrees different than our inverted curve. So it's not some tail event. And I think they're just looking at it and saying, look, everything's mean reverting at some point, and this is a good non-correlated asset that is something different that we don't already have.
So when you, like, are they, and I appreciate the compliments on understanding your strategy. I think one of my advantages is I don't know that much, so I'm just like, I can get to the point pretty quick.
You understand it.
I'm like, okay, steepener. So when you have these discussions with institutions, because you're very sophisticated in your domain, right? Not a lot of people have your experience. They certainly don't have your asset management product. Do you find yourself doing a lot of teaching on that, or do you have some very sophisticated fixed income folks on the other side? We have lots of them as clients. The questions they ask me are not easy to handle.
Hi, Robert McGrory here, Director of Subscriber Development at Hedgeye. Join our entire research analyst team live before the market opens for a deep dive investing analysis, our favorite stock ideas, and our risk manager-in-chief, Keith McCullough's macro overlay. Our team of 40-plus equity analysts discuss key market developments, trends, and our high-conviction long and short investing ideas. You will not get this granular level of insight anywhere else. A video replay, audio version, and analyst summary notes from the call are available shortly after each live show to ensure you don't miss anything. Go to hedgeye.com/research to subscribe and tune in live to the call weekdays at 7:45 a.m. Eastern. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
Yeah, no, we have a lot of really sophisticated clients, like, and they understand what the strategy does. And we do our best to explain it to people, but we're not, you know, marketing it to, you know, individual investors or anything like that. It's an ETF. So anyone can buy it because it trades on the New York Stock Exchange. So, but it's kind of cool. Like, I know sometimes I'll go to like fall conferences or ETF conferences, and I'll just be, you know, walking down the aisle, and people will be like, eyeball, yay, own it, PA. And that always makes me happy
because
they're professional investors who, you know, you can't do this without ISDA agreements. Mm-hmm. So even people who sit on fixed income desks or vol desks, they can't access this market on their own because they can't get ISDAs personally. So I think it's really nice to see so many different types of clients using it. Mm-hmm. But
well, that in and of itself, it's like you're the you're like the rocky road ice cream on the thing. Like, it's like a,
it's been a rocky road this year, Keith. I'll tell you that.
You're the bubble gum. I screwed up twice now naming things properly.
Good.
What did we do? We did dumpster dive, and I called you rocky road.
Yeah,
it's just terrible.
Had a horrible, like, this year has been really, really tough for Eyeball. It's been really bad performances first.
I didn't mean that by calling you Rocky Road.
No, you know, it's
like,
okay.
I mean, it's like a, it's, but the bubblegum version, like the fun one that the kids all want to get. That's what asset management, for me, a go anywhere strategy is just that. My kids love ice cream. The more, the merrier. Even if they're always going to go to the bubblegum, they like to know that there's something else out there, right? Mm-hmm. Should I try it? One of the kids will try. They're like, that sucks compared to bubblegum.
Yeah.
Bubblegum. But you have the bubblegum because of that is the that component. It can sound complex to somebody who doesn't know what it is, but that is a huge competitive advantage because it's a barrier.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody can make bubblegum ice cream like you do. So if you want that kind of thing, whether it's working or not, they got to go to you. That's why you're known for that. I think you should be known for that.
Oh, thank you.
Right. It's I think that's a big. You're never going to answer this on a live wire, but it's like, what is Nancy Davis going to? What's her next ETF going to be? Right. It's like, you know, you should call it Volvexity. That'd be good. But it is. Maybe we can kind of like go through that. A little underwhelming. Suffice to say, like to look at the competitive set of fixed income ETFs that have come out since you started Quadratic.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's passive. A lot of it in fixed income is benchmarked to the ag, and there's so much sitting in short duration too. Like it especially bothers me because a lot of the short duration funds, the ones that are all treasuries, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But you have so many short duration products in the 40-Act space that have structured credit and leverage through derivatives and mortgages, and it's a lot of credit exposure. Some of these products have 50% are BBB- credit.
Oh,
so you just have to be really, really careful with the name.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go by the name only when you're looking at these strategies. And look, our name is a mouthful, right?
Yeah,
it's like the longest ETF name ever, but.
That's good. That's I like. I mean, it's like it is smart and you are smart. So like it sounds smart.
Well, we want people to understand what it is, and call it that. And,
I mean, it's on those like I own T-bill, T-flow. Mm-hmm. It's like all treasuries or futures on treasuries short term. One of my biggest disasters pending, of course, is when the Fed actually does cut interest rates. Like, it's like, okay, are they actually going to do this? Like, is there going to be a blow up in these short term, I call them ball hoggers? Like, no vol, I get my 5% every month, annualized. It's awesome, right? If you have a consequential amount of capital, I say this all the time, you'd have to be brain dead not to have an asset allocation to that.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Do you think that I'm going to get blown up like at some point, and how would I?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons you might like Eyeball right now, because the options are agnostic to the level of rates, so they can benefit from cuts in the front end, so lower yields on the front end.
They'd quite like that.
Or higher yields, so it's kind of like a spread trade. Like, most people have bonds with credit risk, and when you have credit, right, you want credit spreads tighter.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at, like, the three-year investment grade CDX at 30 basis points, like, where's it going to go, right? It can only go to zero. So we have a spread trade too. It's on the spread of interest rates widening. And so it can either be lower front dated yields or higher long dated yields. And it doesn't really matter which side moves. So I think it's nice because you're not taking a one way, most people in fixed income are going for lower yields and tighter credit spreads. Mm-hmm. This is just, it's a different type of spread risk. It's rate risk.
Yeah, most, to your point, ag, any of these widely held ETFs are just that, whether they know they have some sneaky mortgages in there or not, or some BBB credits. I think that's pathetic, really. I mean, it's just yield, it's reaching for yield.
Yeah.
Right? CLOs, some of the crap that's in there, a lot of the crap that's in there. But the ball hoggers, like that's new in our career, right? If you've worked your butt off your whole life, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Like that's, so you're saying that Eyeball, that does make sense. It's a hedge to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
So, and I also think, going back to your point about inflation, like, regular people, I feel like everybody should have inflation as part of their portfolio because, like, why not, right? It's no matter what industry you're in, no matter what job you have, you know, everybody has like a limited amount of savings, right? And we yep. goal is to make that savings last to maintain our lifestyle, you know, as we get older. And mm-hmm. I think especially inflation is a huge risk to retirees because they're not going to benefit from any kind of wage inflation. They're just living off a fixed pool of savings. So.
Yeah, they get, I mean, retirees got absolutely smoked yesterday. I mean, yeah. they've been, they're actually, if you look at a typical 60-40, depending on the target date, mm-hmm. you're down like double digits from 2021.
Yeah.
And nobody really helps you. They don't talk. You know, that's the other thing that you do for people, right? They know who you are. Like, hey, the eyeball girl. You know, it's like, but I think that that is, I know that's the future. That's why we're getting into the ETF business, TBD on that. But I think it's an entirely different experience for an investor, especially in this day and age, where according to me, at least our principles, transparency, accountability, and trust, like by definition, it's just show them your face, explain what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Because 99% of what we compete on or who you compete with on that doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Right? There's no dude for ag, right? Or would people know who he is or she? I'm guessing it's a he because it's like a, but no.
Yeah, it's just a benchmark. You know, yeah. I think there's so much passive investing, especially in fixed income. And then on the institutional side, there's so much money in illiquids, yes. right? Because they've been chasing yield with, you know, and I think now fixed income is getting more exciting on the public side. And so I think we're getting a lot more inquiries from some of these institutional investors. But it's tough with ETFs because you have to get platform approval, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're an active ETF, and that's even harder because then you have to have research coverage.
Yep.
And you know, like Morningstar does not cover us. And that's been a barrier to entry to get onto these wealth platforms.
But we cover you. It's what a meritocracy should be, right?
Yeah.
Like you're going to compete with vanilla ice cream, to go back to the analogy.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they sell.
Yeah.
Chocolate, vanilla.
Yeah.
There's no Rocky Roads. There's no bubble gums. It's just, you know, it's like, okay. And there's no human being like that you could actually hold to account on.
Yeah.
Right?
And I love ETFs for that reason, because I feel like having these funds that are listed on the exchange, anyone can access them, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing because you have access and you can have different strategies, and there are so many different strategies out there.
So many.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll end with that. I mean, Rooster, who one of my analysts, he goes through over 2,700 of these every night within our process. Now that's where dumpster fires are. It's just bad, right? Like it's just some manufacturers of ETFs are just soulless, gutless, toxic dumpster fire generating, like terrible. Which again, I think it's a great opportunity for you. So I can't wait to hear. And you could tell me offline if you want. But the like with the next thing you come up with, because people need more from you. So
thank you, Keith,
and thank you for the real conversation as usual. Many this is a topic many or your domain expertise is what a lot of people need to learn about.
Oh, it's great to see you, and thanks for having me on.
You know, thank you. She's the bubblegum girl. Okay. And I don't know what I am. I guess I'd be some kind of like, I don't know. I don't taste like ice cream. All right. We'll be right back, and we're going to do commodities again. This time we're going to come back with Josh Crum and Jeff Curry.
Thanks for listening to the Hedge Eye Investing Summit, featuring conversations with some of the sharpest minds in investing. To get access to the other 8 Hedge Eye Investing Summit conversations and for more great investing content, go to hedgeye.com.
Don't forget to check out HedgeEye.com to get more actionable investing insights from our team of more than 40 research analysts. And check us out on Twitter at our handle, @HedgeEye. This presentation is informational only. None of the information contained herein constitutes an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor does it constitute investment recommendation or legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice by HedgeEye or any of its employees, officers, agents, or guests. This information is presented without regard for individual investment preferences or risk parameters and is general, non-tailored, non-specific information. This content is based on information from sources believed to be reliable. HedgeEye is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information. The opinions and conclusions contained in this report are those of the individual expressing those opinions and conclusions and are intended solely for the use of HedgeEye subscribers and the authorized recipients of the contents. All investments entail a certain degree of risk, and financial instrument prices can fluctuate based on several factors, including those not considered in the preparation of the content. Consult your financial professional before investing. The information contained herein is protected by United States and foreign copyright laws and is intended solely for the use of its authorized recipient. Access must be provided directly by HedgeEye. Redistribution or republication is strictly prohibited. For more detail, please refer to the terms of service at hedgeye.com/terms of service.